as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, New Life, and welcome to the Growth Group Podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you go deeper with Sunday's teaching, both in your small group and in your individual walk with the Lord. This week, we are continuing our series entitled Ordinary Men, a look at Jesus's 12 disciples, or rather, six of his 12 disciples. We first looked at James, and now we are looking at Philip. Philip, let's see, James was, what was the name we gave for James?
We just said James, the brother of John.
James, the brother of John. Connected to a pretty important.
And collectively called Boanerges.
That's right.
Sons of Thunder.
I still don't know how to pronounce that, even having just heard it. But we're calling Philip the Bean Counter.
And you weren't entirely correct, David, in saying that you were here with Jonathan Markham, because you're
here
with one Philip Haken, who attends our currently attends our staff meetings and also attends our growth group podcast recordings.
Does that mean you're on staff, Pip?
And we've chosen, and you know, we've chosen to do Philip this week. I chose to do Philip this week because it's the week we're going to dedicate Philip, so he'll be the star of the show on Sunday.
We're dedicating all of Sunday to Philip, aren't we?
We will have been the star of the show on Sunday.
I mean, it wasn't, to be honest, until Liz and I began thinking about names for this little guy I'm holding right now that I even realized that there are multiple Philips in the Bible.
Right, and it wasn't until I began to prepare this sermon that I realized there was more than one Philip. I mean, I thought that the Philip in Acts was the same as the Philip in the Gospels, and of course he isn't. Mm-hmm. Philip the deacon is a different guy who encounters the Ethiopian eunuch. We may have mentioned him on Sunday, but I can't remember. We may mention him just because his name's Philip and everything's about Philip on Sunday.
Of course, why not? So we will find out why we've called Philip the Bean Counter in our second question, or I guess most specifically our third. But let's begin at the beginning, the call of Philip. This is a question called the middleman. On a couple of occasions in the Gospels, Philip served as a bridge between people and Jesus. What did Philip believe about Jesus in John 1, and what motivated his bridge making in that chapter? Who has been a bridge maker in your life? What about the incident later in John chapter 12? What kind of a person did Philip have to be for those Greeks to feel safe approaching him? What can you do to be approachable to unbelievers?
This is a great question because our role as ambassadors for Christ involves leading people to Jesus.
And Philip led Nathaniel to Jesus. That's what happened in chapter 1 of John.
According to the Gospel of John, actually, the Gospel of John tells us about, it's the only Gospel that really tells us anything about Philip.
Yeah, yeah, he's just
he doesn't really
list,
sort of appear in any of the others. He said, we found the Messiah.
Right. His profession of faith is unbelievable.
Which is very interesting, really, because we always talk about Peter being the one who...
His profession of faith is what we're used to.
What we're used to being... Okay, so he was the one who basically said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. But Philip decided that before he started walking with Jesus.
Right, having only been called.
Right.
We found the one of whom Moses and the prophets
spoke about. Which is pretty remarkable.
Oh,
and that's what he says to Nathaniel. You know, you've got to come and see this. It's like, you know, this is... But, you know, realizing how much how much educated Jews knew about the Old Testament, you realize that just simply saying, here's the Messiah, the one Moses... It meant so much more to each of them because of what they knew.
Yeah, far more than than to you and I.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just a really interesting aspect about this whole study, this whole series, is really digging into how much did the disciples know? What was their level of awareness? What was their expectation for Jesus and his role? I think those are really interesting questions because they, yeah, speak to the expectation of the faithful Jew. Like these guys, they're not unfaithful by any means.
No, and you know, in all probability, I've read quite a lot, obviously, around these people, and there is a strong suggestion that the majority of them were fishermen.
Mm.
That because
those of whom we know little about.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That there was a. I mean, we know that James and John were fishermen. We know that Andrew and Peter were fishermen, and Philip appears to come along.
He lives in the same city. Lives in the same city. Which is clearly a fishing city.
Yeah. So the suggestion is that that Philip and probably Nathaniel were also fishermen. They may have all come from the same fishing company. But it's interesting that Jesus, I mean, okay, as we thought last week, these people clearly weren't the educated elite of the elite. They were people who in the Jewish education system had missed the cut. But the fact that he would choose so many of them from the same background. I mean, obviously Matthew wasn't that background. Simon the Zealot wasn't. And
Judas, I think, was a native of Jerusalem.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So.
Our second question gets to a little bit more of Philip's background. It's about the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus' feeding of the 5,000 is one of the few gospel stories recorded in all four gospels. But the account in John includes a few details the other authors leave out. In the Synoptic Gospels, Jesus tells his disciples, "You give them something to eat." But in John, Jesus' focus lasers in on one disciple, Philip. Read the account in John 6 and consider why Jesus singled out Philip in this way. What did Jesus want to teach him? What was the content of the test?
Well, I think it's really interesting because here we have somebody who confesses that this is the Messiah and yet is reluctant to believe he can do the impossible.
Right. I mean, what did he think that the Messiah could do? Is he a boundless, never-ending miracle worker?
He'd probably seen Jesus already do some miracles. But now, his immediate thought is, can I pay for this?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we may be being very unfair calling Philip the bean counter, but, his immediate thought is, we can't pay for it. And that says to us so much about what is our immediate thought. Our immediate thought is not...
Our instinct, our reaction.
Instinct is not... Well, God's obviously going to provide for this. It's, can we provide for it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important lesson for us. That we either, and I think, I think we learned, well, I certainly learned to look at this when I was thinking about what was the situation with Arav, was that I thought I was trusting God, but I think I was trusting, but there was at least part of my trusting of God was trusting of CAR T-cells.
Right.
But, and so...
You finally came up with this great solution. This is going to work. It has to work.
Right. And so here, I think, I'm sure Philip was wanting to trust God, but he was actually trusting the amount of money they didn't have, or not, or trusting the fact, or looking to the what they hadn't got, to draw the conclusion that they couldn't do it.
Our next question draws a similar conclusion. Let's read it. Philip has been called the bean counter because of his response to Jesus' question, "Where will we buy bread?" After a little quick mental arithmetic, Philip exclaims, 200 denarii, or 8 months' wages, wouldn't be enough. Did Philip operate out of a scarcity or abundance mindset? Do you have any 200 denarii problems in your life that you've given up hope on? If Philip were here today, what do you think he would teach you about living by faith and not by sight?
Good question. I think that it's, you know, it, we're looking at the fact that I think that it was, that Jesus, that the scripture tells us in verse 6 of chapter 6, that he was testing Philip. Mm-hmm. He was seeing, okay, Philip, how much do you understand about what I'm doing here? He knew what he was going to do.
Right.
And now, he knew how he was going to do it. Mm. But he said, but Philip doesn't turn around and say, well, I know you can do this, Lord, but we've only got this.
Right.
He immediately says, we can't. Where can we buy the bread?
Right.
And so Jesus is, and I think he does the same for us, he wants to move us to an increasing consciousness of his ability to provide for anything he calls us to do. The only criteria is, does he want us to do it? Mm. And Philip needs to understand that, you know, sometimes we just have to say, okay, you want us to feed these people, you got to tell us how to do it.
Right. I was considering trying to work into this question something about, you know, because I'm asking about 200 denarii problems, right?
Right.
And, you know, in the distinction between maybe some problems that we're facing now and solutions that we would hope to see, and what we see here in John chapter 6 is that Jesus is the one who wants to feed the 5,000, and Jesus is, you know, using his disciples to do so.
Right.
But I think oftentimes we have this big problem, and we think all we need is more faith in order to solve it. But we have to, you know, make sure that we're considering, well, what's God's will in this situation?
Right.
Maybe it isn't to feed the 5,000 in our life.
Right.
Maybe it is, and we just need to have faith.
And maybe he does want us to use our resources.
Right.
The resources that
right.
we have. And he wants to point out to us, you can do it if you spend that money. But you've been saving that money for something else.
Right.
But I want you to spend it on this.
Something that may look wasteful to you, but, you know, from the divine perspective,
right.
is an investment. Our last question kind of relates to what you said a minute ago about Jesus trying to broaden Philip's perspective and kind of discern what it is that Philip knows or believes about Jesus. This one is called Show Us the Father. A mark of a good teacher cannot be that his students have no questions, because Jesus' disciples had tons of questions. Observe first Thomas's and then Philip's confusion in John 14. Summarize the exchange between Jesus and these disciples in your own words. What does this teach us about our posture as learners and God's posture as a teacher?
Yeah, this is a great... Again, you know, they come to... Philip has gone all the way through this process of all the way through this 1.5 years or 2 years of walking with Jesus, and he's still saying, "Lord, show us the Father, and we will be satisfied." He was the one who said, "You're the Messiah, the Son of the Living God," but I can't see him.
Yeah, I mean. That's definitely true. But if we back up a moment and just look at what inspired that question or that request from Philip, we see Jesus being very confusing, as he often is, especially in the book of John.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the more I read the Gospel of John, the more I think, wow, he was stretching people in their understanding.
It almost looks like a completely different Jesus than we get in the Synoptic Gospels.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, there's so much of Jesus' life that are recorded in none of the four Gospels, as John chapter 20 teaches us. But, yeah, Jesus begins by saying, I go to prepare a place for you, and I will come again and take you to myself. And Thomas then says, we have no idea where you're going. How can we know the way to where you are going? And Jesus then responds, I am the way to the Father, and if you know me, well, then you've seen the Father. And Philip's like, okay, hold up, show us the Father.
Yeah.
If you say that if we've seen you, we've seen the Father, and he's like, I don't think I've seen the Father. If you simply show me the Father, kind of like you gave Moses a bit of a glimpse on Mount Sinai, if you simply show me the Father, I'll be content with that.
And if I'm supposed to have seen him, point out what I missed.
Right.
You know, where did I miss him?
And Jesus is, you know, very mildly and with loads of competition, confrontational to Philip, isn't he? He asks him, "Do you not know me, Philip?"
Right.
Using his name, you know?
Yeah, do you not know
Philip?
Have I been with you all this time, Philip? And
yeah.
Yet you still don't know who I am.
Right. You really sense Jesus's his struggle with his calling a little bit there. Because he, and you know, in other places he says, like, where is your faith and how long must I be with his generation?
Right. And but it also maybe just trying to jog Philip's memory. Don't forget, Philip, what did you say I was when you brought me to Nathanael?
Have you known me? Well, go back to the very first moment when you know me.
Yeah.
What did you say back then?
And and what's changed your mind? What has shifted your thinking?
Well, however, I mean, let's be fair. When Philip says, you are the Messiah, the one that Moses and the prophets spoke about, he did not say, you are at one with the Father. He had no perception that the Messiah was a divine person, certainly that he was, you know, the second person in the Trinity. This is all new information to him.
Right.
But, so I guess part of what Jesus is doing is he's redefining, or not redefining, he's expanding the definition of the Messiah.
Yeah, he's taking them on their next step of discovering what being the Messiah actually was.
Mm-hmm. The necessity not only of a human Messiah, but of a divine Messiah.
Right, and we're right bang in the middle of this John 14, in the Jesus' final teaching of his disciples.
Right, probably as he's walking to the Garden of Gethsemane at this point. Yeah, really very dramatic when we realize that.
Mm.
Well, there's plenty of drama left for us in the remainder of this series.
Yeah.
I think we're going to look at Andrew next, am
Andrew
I right?
Andrew next, yes.
Wonderful. That will be fun. And we look forward to seeing you guys there. And I thank you for witnessing my little boy's dedication last Sunday. So much fun. We'll see you next time. As I wait.